As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Stadtcast, the German football pod, brought to you by The Athletic. In this episode, it's just another Tasmaniac Monday as Schalke edge closer to a historically bad record that's even worse than Michael Jackson's 1987 effort. Werder Bremen provide hope for the Bundesliga resistance after surviving a meeting with the Death Star in Bavaria. Erling Haaland's foreplay makes Lucien Favre lose the plot. And following their 6-0 defeat by Spain, Germany wonder if Löw is really all they need. All of this in Stadtcast. Today, to discuss these momentous developments, we welcome Oliver Müller and Christoph Biermann to the show. Hello, guys. Christoph, Werder Bremen got a point against Bayern after losing there for 45 consecutive years, or thereabouts. 1-1 draw. Yeah, 10. A 1-1 draw against the Bayern team that looked a little bit less formidable and less invincible than in recent months. I guess the injuries caught up with them. There's no Joshua Kimmich. Some of the international players still looked very, very tired. Niklas Süle was on the bench, not being fit enough, in the words of Dieter Flick, Hans-Dieter Flick. Was that the sort of result that maybe suggests this isn't a foregone conclusion after all this year?
Yeah, they looked like mortals. I mean, and the interesting thing about this match was Werder Bremen wasn't even very lucky getting a point. I mean, maybe you could think, oh, there was a situation they had 20 chances to score goals, and in the end they didn't make it, and Werder got a point. No, that wasn't the truth. The truth was that also Werder had some very good chances, and without the tremendous Manuel Neuer, they probably even would have lost it. And from my point of view, there is some hope for the Bundesliga that we might get a title race this season. I mean, I was always very pessimistic about it, but for the first time, I'm slightly optimistic that we get some suspense here.
Do you think that Bayern are just slightly less of a working side now that their midfield options are getting depleted? I mean, they played with Müller in a more central role and Musiala and Goretzka to come on because there was an early injury and they need to shift things around. Are they running out of option a little bit now that Thiago is gone and they just don't seem to have the same kind of depth in those positions?
I think so. You could think that Joshua Kimmich probably is the most important player in German football when you look at the result of the German national team without him and now Bayern without him.
But you call him the most irreplaceable player in German football.
Yes, and it looks a bit like this, but it's not only about Kimmich. I mean, this season will be a lot about how teams and even the best, and Bayern are the best, are coping with the situation with too many games, a lot of injuries, probably COVID infections, and so on. So it's a mix of also a bit luck or bad luck on the one hand side, and the cleverness of the athletic coaches and so on. And when you look at Bayern, it wasn't dramatic, but you could see they are having problems that won't be easily solved.
What about Werder Bremen? What do we make of them? I mean, they're in a very good position in the table. For what it's worth, in ninth, but they only have 11 points after eight games because most of them have been draws, five draws, only two wins and one loss. Very difficult to suggest that there is really strong progress, but at least it seems to me that Florian Kohfeldt has things turned around to the extent that we're no longer thinking of them as a relegation candidate. Is that
And I think it's a big achievement. I mean, it's now it's a bit like boring Werder with all their draws, and also it's not actually fascinating to watch them play football. But Florian Kohfeldt turned things around with some new players, but they couldn't do much on the transfer market. They even lost Davy Klaassen to Ajax because they just needed some money, and Klaassen was one of the important players in the team. But they got some defensive stability, as they showed in Munich, and also sometimes have some attacking options that other teams that are serious contenders for relegation don't have. So I think that we have to praise Florian Kohfeldt because it wasn't easy, and but they are now on a good way. That's at least my impression from so far.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. Also on a very good way, as we like to say in Germany, Borussia Dortmund. They beat Hertha 5-2 in a very entertaining game on Saturday night. It was all about Youssoufa Moukoko's Bundesliga debut with 16 years and one day, the youngest ever Bundesliga player. But of course, the real story on the day was Erling Haaland scoring four goals, although only three if you listen to Lucien Favre, because he got a little bit confused afterwards, saying, "I don't care so much about goals. I'm more interested in passes and crosses." I mean, if ever there was a manager sort of revealing all the good and bad things about his coaching, that was definitely the moment. Christoph, where do we start? I mean, I guess we have to start with Erling Haaland. I mean, what a player this guy is.
If I was, I'm now slightly optimistic about a decent title race this season. It also has to do with Haaland, because what made Bayern so invincible? Yes, there were a lot of qualities, but maybe one of the most important was Robert Lewandowski, a guy who didn't stop scoring. And now Borussia Dortmund has this guy too, and he does it with 20 years on a level that is, it's not even impressive. It's almost unbelievable. You also have the impression that he is also carrying the team to a certain degree, because he is not only because of the physical appearance. He looks like the locomotive on the pitch for the team, and that's, I think, very inspiring. On the other hand side, we have been talking about Borussia Dortmund's problems, and maybe they show up in games to come, but at least now it's great performance by Haaland and great performance by Borussia Dortmund.
And there is so much excitement about this team. I mean, when they're playing, as we know, I don't think there's any team in the Bundesliga that is quite as exciting and as beautiful on the ball with their combination, all the youthfulness that they seem to produce. Now in Moukoko, they have this new kid who I'm sure will score goals, even though it's going to be difficult to replace Erling Haaland as a number nine at the moment. Yeah, but Dortmund, I think, just suggesting that maybe, as you said, even though they have issues and they conceded another two goals, the firepower up front will just carry them a lot closer than they have been in recent years. They're only 1 point behind Bayern after eight games on 18, level with Bayer Leverkusen. Now, Leverkusen won 2-1 at Bielefeld, but this is a game that I think will go down in history for something else. Bielefeld registered an XG of 0. Yes, 0. But they still scored a goal. Christoph,
Yeah, and
how is that possible?
It's possible. It's actually not the first time in the history of the Bundesliga. Hertha also managed to do it some years ago. I think they scored from an own goal or so. But anyhow, how did they do it? Bayer Leverkusen scored, or Lukas Radetzky, the goalkeeper, scored because he got a back pass, and that was really one of the easy back passes, so not under pressure and not too fast and not misplaced or whatever. And then there was this little tiny bump on the pitch, or this some grass was standing out, and you could see that it was jumping up like 5 centimeters or so. So Radetzky hit the ball wrongly and it went into his own goal. And so that was how Bielefeld equalized without shooting at the goal. And as you did, they didn't do it for a depressing 90 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, Bielefeld, we thought might be, you know, playing good football, might be entertaining. You were quite positive about
that.
But yes,
yes. It seems to be that they were last season, they were the best team in the second division. They were defensively extremely stable. They were scoring a serious amount of goals, not crazy. But now when you see them in the Bundesliga, you have the impression it's not enough. It's missing here a bit, missing there a bit. It's not that they are completely lost. They seem to be out of their depth, and it looks, if they don't manage to turn things around, I mean, especially against opponent not like Bayer Leverkusen, who are belonging to the top teams of the Bundesliga, they might get real problems. I mean, they still have problems and But they have to turn things around, definitively.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
But let's talk a little bit about Schalke. As we alluded to, they are not exactly doing tremendously well. Mark Uth, their striker, said he was about to cry in the dressing room after yet another defeat, 2-0 at home to Wolfsburg. They are now within a realistic realm of equalizing Tasmania's Berlin all-time record of 31 games without a win. Only 7 to go. Oliver Lemuller, our Ruhrport expert, joins us now. Oliver, just how terrible are Schalke, and when will things go slightly better for them?
I was in the stadium on Saturday, and I have to say, especially the first 35 minutes of the performance were really, really poor. They were quite shocking. And the performance was like performance of a team who nearly lost all of its confidence. They got an early goal against Schalke, and then afterwards Wolfsburg created, I think, 4 or 5 big chances. So the fact that Wolfsburg was leading 2-0 at halftime was just lucky from the point of view of Schalke. Wolfsburg could have scored several more goals. Afterwards, Manuel Baum, the manager, changed the system and took some exchanges, and then it went a little bit better. But you never had really the feeling that Schalke could equalize in that match. So, of course, it was really, really disappointing.
There were some signs earlier this season that Schalke perhaps were beginning to play a bit more football, and I thought the game against Mainz was quite encouraging. But was this game, in the way it played out, so depressingly inept and disappointing that we're now back at square one? We're now back at the end of the David Wagner era, where you just feel that there is no cohesion and no belief whatsoever in this team.
I think so, because then one day after the match, there was a training session at Schalke, and there had been a quarrel between Naldo, the existence coach, and Vedat Ibizovic, the striker. So, of course, there's tension in the team, there's tension in the club, and it's right. They have shown some small progress during the last matches before the Wolfsburg match, but when you don't get the results you desperately need, then of course you stop believing in that turnaround. And at the moment, when you take a look at the fixtures, they're going to play Borussia Mönchengladbach next weekend, and then the week after they're playing against Leverkusen. And if Wolfsburg is an opponent which is out of reach for Schalke, and it looked like on Saturday, then these two opponents will be even more dangerous for Schalke. So the situation is really, really serious at the moment.
Christoph, you've been calling Schalke the new Hamburger SV for a few months now. First in jest, but now I think it might be actually depressingly true. Are they in some kind of death spiral which inevitably points towards relegation, you think?
Yeah, and on Saturday, for a long time during the match, and especially with the reaction afterward, you were quoting Mark Uth, they look like a dead team in a way. They don't have any idea now. I mean, after so many days and weeks and months without winning a game, how to win? How to actually win a match and get some points. And they scored the least goals in the Bundesliga. They got the most goals against them. They are bottom of the table, and they really look hopeless. And they look much worse actually than Hamburg ever did in the Bundesliga. It remembers me more of the low points of Schalke in the 80s. I mean, they have been in the second division several times in the 80s. There was even one season where they were close being relegated to the third division at that time. And in a way, and with all the general situation, they with the enormous financial problem they are facing, and there is also a lot of internal turmoil because Alexander Jobst, the marketing boss, wants to restructure the club, and there is a lot of opponents to that, and discussions about it. So it's altogether a very black picture that Schalke is painting right now.
Yeah, it certainly does sound pretty bleak. Oliver, is there any hope for them? Is there anything they can do? I mean, they've changed the manager, they've changed the whole chief executive setup and the board not that long ago either. I mean, are they beyond repair? I mean, there must be a way of righting these wrongs somehow with the size and the history of Schalke. Surely there's a way of saving them.
At the moment, it looks like that their only hope can be that there will be two teams in the Bundesliga that have maybe throughout the whole season some problems more than Schalke 04. Of course, when you take a look at the squad of Schalke, it is a team that has more technical abilities than, for instance, Mainz 05 or Arminia Bielefeld, who have known right from the start of the season that they have to struggle not to get relegated. But on the other hand, comes more and more to the light that this team is just not prepared for this type of football they have to show in order not to get relegated. So I think it's difficult for Schalke to make some changing in the team because of the financial situation. The amount of debts of the club is far more than 200 million euros. That was the amount of debt they had at the end of last year. So I guess at the moment it will be around 230, 240 million euros of debts. And of course, they don't have any sugar daddy, which means Clemens Tönnies, who was a strong man at Schalke throughout the last two decades. He stepped down in summer, also because there have been some scandals around him, and also because there was a lot of pressure from the supporters who want to get rid of him. But this has a price. The price is that Schalke has not this opportunity they've taken advantage of many times throughout the last decades, that whenever they need money, they go to him, and he, because he's a Protestant of meat, a really rich person, and borrowed some money from him. And he offered that to Schalke in summer, but they refused this offer. And so when they want to buy a new player, which you can say maybe they need him, then they have to sell first the player in January. And so the situation is really, really difficult. And also because there's a lot of tension in the club because of what Christoph just mentioned, the discussion, if they want to capitalize maybe the professional football team, if they want to work with strategic investors and so on. It looked like it could be a really difficult season, but on the other hand, of course, you have to say there are also some other clubs in the Bundesliga who have some serious problems. One is Mainz, another one is Bielefeld. Even Cologne is not a very, very good team. So they have to struggle until the end. But of course, you are Schalke 04. There's always loud, and it's never easy to walk through a crisis, to solve a crisis at an emotional club like Schalke.
Yeah, no one to save their bacon now with...
Exactly.
I don't know if sugar daddy is the right word for Clemens Tönnies, but maybe sausage daddy. I don't know, it sounds wrong. But you know what I mean.
Yes.
No Clemens Tönnies there.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX, stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So Cologne, as you said, Oliver, down there with Schalke, it was a meeting between a Champions League contender and a relegation candidate when they played Union Berlin. And guess what? Cologne lost and Union are in fifth. Christoph, I think you wrote the wrong book. You should have written the book about Union Berlin winning their first ever Bundesliga season. They're only 4 points adrift of Bayern after 8 games.
Yeah, but you have to look at whom they had been playing so far. So they haven't playing Bayern and Dortmund and Leverkusen and so on. So they are very happy that they picked up 15 points already. And I think... they won't be no relegation battle for Union this season, that's for sure. But slowly they will dropping down the table a bit, but still it's a tremendous achievement for them.
I expected you to sound a bit more upbeat.
Yeah, it's especially the match on Sunday in Cologne was quite impressive because they had a extremely long injury list. Almost 10 players were missing for several recent injuries. There is also one COVID infection and some players ill and so on. Even had to bring in a 16-year-old youth player from the youth team to fill the bench, and so that made it even more impressive how they won. And it was interesting to see how stable they were. And also when you look at the distribution of goal chances, and Cologne had a free kick in the very last second of the game that hit the bar. In the end, it was a deserved a win that Union was taking away. If I may say a word about Cologne, I think you can see...
Make it a word that we can actually broadcast.
I would say you can see a pattern here with Schalke and Cologne and Bielefeld. They are in a way okay defensively, but always making individual errors on the one hand side. But on the other hand side, they are almost, it's almost impossible for them to play out some chances in front of the opposing goal. Cologne scored from a set piece, and it's, for example, and it's for them, it almost looks like impossible to create any goal chances. And we have been talking about Bielefeld not giving one single shot against Leverkusen. And also Oliver described how difficult it was for Schalke to create anything. So what we have here is three teams that have enormous problems on this side of the pitch. And I think that shows up that we will talk about them as relegation contenders for many weeks to come.
Yeah, a side with enormous problems on all sides on the pitch. That is a very neat segue into our last, but perhaps most depressing topic of the week, which is, of course, Germany's 6-0 defeat by Spain and the ensuing fallout. Oliver, first of all, how shocking were Germany, and what do they have to do now before, you know, this will become an even bigger catastrophe with the Euros not far away?
Yes, of course. This was something that brought back the German national team into the discussion of the football supporters, because during the last weeks and months we had the impression, maybe because of the corona crisis and other topics, that the supporters were not so much caring about the performances of the German national team. But this, of course, was a wake-up call, you can say. Yeah, the problem is that solution that would be on the hand, get some experienced players back into the squad, like, for instance, Thomas Müller, who played a brilliant last season with Bayern München, or Mats Hummels, who've really shown good performances with Borussia Dortmund, in order to stabilize the team a little bit. This will not be so easy, because Joachim Löw pointed out that he's not interested in bringing these players back. And this is, of course, the big discussion at the moment in Germany. If this turnaround, in order to stabilize the team, in order to have the opportunity to play a good European championship in summer, if this will be possible with Joachim Löw or maybe not. I think if Joachim Löw will show some, I wouldn't say greatness, but some courage, he thinks twice about the decision he took and says, okay, we desperately need stability in the defense, which is the main problem at the moment. And because of this, I get whether Mats Hummels or Jerome Boateng back into the team. But this, of course, would mean that he has to correct himself. And nobody likes to correct himself when you once took a decision. And I think Joachim Löw, I'm afraid, especially not.
But Christoph, this is deeper though, isn't it? I mean, yes, you can imagine a German backline playing slightly better with Hummels there, maybe even Boateng. Maybe they press a lot more decisively up front with Thomas Müller rather than Leroy Sané. But it felt to me, especially in the second half when it switched to a three-man defence and man-marking midfield, I mean, Kroos and Gündogan man-marking Spaniards is just the thing of horrors, that this team seemed so lost and so almost disbelieving that they had any chance with a game plan, with a strategy that they were supposed to put on the pitch, that the personnel almost didn't really matter all that much. That was the impression that I had. What about you?
Was it Jonathan Woodgate, when he was playing at Real Madrid, who was saying that Real Madrid is a slaughterhouse for defenders, because nobody is defending in midfield and up front? And it reminded me a bit of that for a long stretch of the game, because nobody was helping a very inexperienced back four. and with, also with players out of position like Matthias Ginter, who was a right back. And I was thinking, how can that happen? I mean, how can a team be so ill prepared tactically from a football side like the Germans were? Because everything was going wrong. They tried a deep block in the first half. That blocked nothing. They tried a high press at the beginning of the second half, and there was even more space for the Spanish slaughters to the German defense. And if stuff like this is happening, you really have to talk about the coach and who is responsible for this. And I was always a big supporter for Jogi Löw, also even after 2018, because my support declined a bit, to be honest. But now I the whole thing, the whole atmosphere, everything that the German team is sending out tells me it's over. There needs to be a change. Maybe not immediately, because it's so difficult to. I mean, they only meet again in March to prepare for the European Championship, if there is a European Championship then. But yeah, the story is over, and that's my impression. And if you decide, okay, we go with Löw and his team to the Euro or not, the change will be afterwards, and the change is actually overdue.
If you think it is over, and if you think that Löw cannot last beyond the Euros, wouldn't it make more sense making the switch now, though? It's very unlike the German FA to change managers between tournaments. I think it only happened to Bertie Vogts in recent years with a lot of drama that was attached to it. But Oliver, what do you think? What is the most realistic outcome of this German FA board meeting on the 4th of December, when Oliver Bierhoff has to sort of present both the progress or lack thereof since 2018, and a decision has to be taken about whether Löw will stay? What's your hunch? What will be the outcome?
You're asking me for a realistic outcome, but I have to say the realistic outcome will not be the best outcome. I think they will carry on with Joachim Löw because of several reasons. First of all, you said, what will be the analysis taken by Oliver Bierhoff? Oliver Bierhoff is someone who came in to the German Football Association and to the German national team as a director because of people like Jürgen Klinsmann, the predecessor of Löw, and of course Joachim Löw. So I think you will not cannot expect a decision to get rid of Löw by Oliver Bierhoff. He already pointed out that he still has trust in Joachim Löw. The best thing would be to take a decision, maybe to lead some talks with, for example, Ralf Rangnick, or maybe lead a talk with Stefan Kunz, who is doing a good job at the under-21 German team. The point is that the German, not only Joachim Löw, but also the German Football Association, has not a good timing in taking decisions. And this is lasting for years. I mean, when you think back in the Confed Cup 2017, Löw played with young players. He played with Draxler. He plays with Leroy Sané. The team was really, really doing well. Then you have the World Championship at 2018. And then he played with the elder players again, players he known for a couple of years, and of course has some really deep personal connections to these players. So it's not so easy for Löw to take decisions in order to reform the team. Then after this tournament in Russia, nothing happened for over half a year. And then suddenly he threw out Hummels, Boateng and Müller. And so you can see that Joachim Löw has quite some problems in order to take right decision at the right period of time, because he is a coach for such a long time and he has some personal connection to the players. I think the best thing would be, that would be indeed the best outcome, to bring in something new. But I'm not believing that the German Football Association has got the courage to take this decision.
So they muddle through until they get knocked out again in the group stage by France.
I mean, they don't have to be knocked out. Maybe they will make some progress, but I think in order to establish something new and really build up a new team, you need some new characters around the team. And I don't think they have the courage to take this decision.
It went so bad in Sevilla against Spain. I think that a lot of players were not prepared mentally, and that has more to do with their personal situation. You had some Bayern players and some others. I think they, for them, the game was not really important. I mean they wouldn't go on the pitch and say I don't care or so, but I think this underlying thing that is so my program is so was so dense, I had to play so many games, blah 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 blah, and so on, prevented some resilience, and when it started going wrong, I think it was very difficult to switch. So I wouldn't blame Löw altogether for the heaviest defeat since 1931. I mean it's unbelievable, but it was also one of these days that can happen in football, and we see it with the best teams, but it also shows a lot of underlying problems that we mentioned, and they have partly to do, also to do with the coach and the whole setup that is in place now for 14 years.
But Christoph, the point that there are at the moment so many matches and that the players maybe are a little bit tired mentally and the schedule is so tight, this is for me not a point in order to put in as a defense of Joachim Löw, because especially in situations like this, it would be very, very helpful if you would have got a new spirit in the German national team, if you have a new approach also as maybe with a new coach, someone who can address the players in another way, and also someone who can't be held responsible for mistakes which have been committed in the past. And of course, when you are a coach for such a long time, you normally made some decisions which are not very well in retro perspective. And all these things sum up and create a kind of atmosphere throughout the German team, which is not very productive.
I'm afraid I agree. The only question is what can be done about this realistically. Oliver told us that he thinks nothing will change in the immediate future. Christoph, do you think they will pull the plug and will blame Löw for this, and maybe out of fear that things could go even worse next summer, or will they just somehow believe that things will turn out okay and just stick with him for the time being?
Yeah, I think they will try to, as you said, muddle through to the tournament, and I wouldn't say that there is no chance to get out there with a positive result, and I think the expectation what a positive result might be are lower now. So right now nobody in Germany is expecting Germany to win the European Championship, or not even getting close to winning it. But if they manage a decent tournament, I think it would be honorable goodbye to Löw. I think that's what they will be looking for, and then starting new with a internal solution. Oliver rightly mentioned Stefan Kunz, the under-21 national coach, or somebody coming from outside. I think everybody in Germany would love to have Jürgen Klopp as a national coach, but I think we have to wait for some more years until he is prepared to take over.
I think that's right. Okay, that's all we have time for today. Thank you very much, Oliver and Christoph. Thank you, dear listener, for tuning in to Starcast Pod. We'll be back next week with more and hopefully slightly more uplifting news of German football. See you then.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.